Red lights on.
Never gets old.
Tis the season?
It does alternate between red and green.
I meant Spielmoss?
Oh.
Spielmoss? I don't feel like I ever say it right.
It's because you're studying Spanish, not German.
And I'm bad at Spanish. See?
Probably not great for your German either.
I have shipped out all of the Spielmoss trophy thingies.
I have mine packed. I'm taking it to the East Coast with me.
Greg had brought his to the show at our two-player meetup, and I noticed he had a bigger one. And I'm like, oh, I wish I had made it just a little bit bigger because it kind of only holds small pieces.
It'll be good with your 8-minute empire pieces. That's what I'm envisioning you putting on your Spielmoss counter.
Yeah, that would be a good one to put. What else are you looking forward to playing this Spielmoss?
That's a great question. I would venture a guess that I'm going to play some Crew with my family on the East Coast. My dad and aunt are more like traditional board gamers, so I'm likely to play some Casino or maybe some Cribbage. Spielmoss is going to be fun.
Yes. Post your Spielmoss trophy thingies on Blue Sky or Discord.
Share with us. Enjoy in the festivities.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we lose to 7-year-olds in Connect Four. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
In our defense, we're really busy with like setting up, trying to teach our game, trying to say hello to people that were coming in for the event.
Yes, that was it.
Didn't have anything to do that. We just got.
Look, I wasn't setting out to win our Connect Four ladder and like destroy the kids. But I didn't expect to be totally legitimately beaten right off the bat by a 7-year-old. I later lost to a 5-year-old.
It's tough out there.
Connect Four is hard. Not even a secret pattern. They're just trying to get four in a line.
You can see it the whole way.
How hard is our game if Connect Four is hard for us?
We are playing Connect Four. I'm so bad as playing Go.
Later on in this episode, we're going to talk about some of our highlights from the year. This week we had, I think, one of mine, even though it just happened, our Misplay meetup at Sports Basement here in San Francisco, where we brought and played a whole bunch of two-player games, and we had our friends there, we had some family there, we had Greg Spielmoss show up not only to play our game, but he also brought his game. That event, I don't know. I remember you asking me at one point during the event going, you know, what are people saying? And I'm like, I'm just having fun. I wasn't even like deeply trying to get feedback from people. I was just having fun hanging out with my friends, playing some board games, ran up to Whole Foods, got some pizza, brought it back. I was just having fun.
Did you use the Misplay credit card for the pizza?
I did. I paid for that personally.
It was a good spread of games too. I saw we played, there was chess game happening. There was the Connect Four ladder. I saw Moncala. You got in a game of Star Realms. Good spread for what I would call our gaming group for the evening.
Yeah, kids were playing Jungle Ball, the first game I ever bought at Gen Con. We had High Tide, we had Fox in the Forest. We had a lot of games for people to play. There's a lot of two-player games. We're working on one more.
I spent a lot of time teaching it.
We did, yeah. I found to teach harder with my friends and family. I don't know why.
I think it's because you just skip over. It's easy to fall into kind of that familiar, oh yeah, we're just like talking and like, here's how this game works. And you skip over a detail, like the pattern is supposed to be all in one color.
I was very clear this time. Did anybody make that mistake?
I had at least one person ask me.
Okay.
I don't remember if I taught it wrong or if I inherited that table, but you're right. It was a really nice time.
I was incredibly appreciative of, you know, the number of people who showed up. There were more than a dozen people there playing, and I remember thinking, this is nice. This was a warm moment.
On a cold day.
I think it's definitely something we should consider doing again because it's such a great space to play games. It's free to rent out. There's a big area where you can sit. There's tables, there's chairs. You can bring in food, you can bring in drink. There's couches to relax on when you're not playing. It was great.
I've had nothing but positive experiences with the Sports Basement community spaces. Shout out to them. This is the second event that I've booked for different organizations.
I think trying to do it monthly would be too much, but we're going to go back.
Bi-monthly?
Bi-monthly. Matches.
Once a quarter?
We'll talk a little bit more about the event and some of the feedback that we got about our game. But before we do that, today's episode is sponsored by Grimmith and their debut game, Vermin. In Vermin, you'll trap, bait, repel, and exterminate your way through a swarm of mischievous critters as you race to avoid infestation. Don't be the last to rid your house of vermin. Vermin is launching soon on Kickstarter, and you can get in early. Just visit their Kickstarter pre-launch page and click Notify Me on Launch. You'll be first to know when the campaign goes live. Check out Vermin on Kickstarter. You can type Vermin, or you can type Grimmith, G-R-I-M-M-Y-T-H, in the search bar and join the pre-launch. You can also find links in our Discord.
Where are we?
Can I say in a really good spot? Does that work?
I think so.
You have told me off mic a few times that, and I agree, it's not a mystery to me, that the last few shows, maybe the last couple of months of shows, have felt a little downbeat. I even think back to the episodes kind of mid season two, unstucking, getting ourselves out of that jam we felt we were in. And the last couple of months have kind of felt like that. I feel like we've been digging the hole that we're trying to get out of. And I think there's a lot more clarity, positivity, and direction and belief in what we're doing.
I agree with you. Off mic, we've also talked a lot about what season three looks like, because I think some combination of feeling the, I don't want to call it drudgery, but feeling the weight of trying to meet the deadlines that we set for ourselves made it easy to be prone to falling into a mindset of time to pull the plug, like panic button, right? And getting a chance to sit down and talk about what season three will look like and how to have season three continue to have the sense of belief, drive, common focus. You said it really well when you were like, oh, the change that we just made to the game is a byproduct of having set aside the time to sit down and work on the game together. And for a long time, that has been the piece for me that I was like, we're working really hard. I know you're working really hard on business strategy, thinking through like next steps and the strategic planning. And I've labored more in kind of like playtest land and show editing. But there was always that piece where we were like, oh, Wednesday meetings were going to become the time where we worked. And Wednesday meetings kind of morphed into playtesting that was important, but playtesting that could have probably been served better at a different time, whereas that Wednesday time could have been better served as our work time. And so kind of getting back to sitting down, working on the game together, for me, has been kind of like the single biggest change that has lightened and illuminated kind of the path forward.
Would you say has guided you? Like, I don't know, like a bright, big, shiny North Star?
I don't think that's inaccurate.
We say that because after some recent in-person playtests, one of the changes that we've made to the game, we have a wild tile that is all three colors in the game that could be moved around. And what we've been playtesting with recently and what we took to our event for people to try and play is that wild tile stays in the center. We had a really organic conversation with our friend Dan playing the game where we noticed that the wild tile was just being pushed off to the corner. And the conversation went something like, does that always happen? Does that wild tile? And somebody had said, I just don't even want to think about it. I just like, just put it in the corner. We don't have to worry about all the possibilities that exist around it. And that kind of triggered, whoa, no, having that in the middle of the board opens up so much more. If that tile's in the middle of the board, a lot of things become live. And so we started playtesting and locking it. Even though we initially created that wild tile purposefully so that you would have something to do on the first turn. I do think it's better served our game staying in the center. I think games are more likely to end sooner. Our early testing is also saying that's true, on average by about 4 turns shorter. Still possible to draw in the game. But, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to think about how do we make the end game better. Well, what if the middle game was just better? And I think that's what it is.
In bringing the average number of turns down, it also is, I think, on some level, forcing players to play in a more interactive way. Not that the kind of tier one or meta strategy of play defense, disallow the patterns that you aren't holding to be on the board. It does complicate that because you can't manipulate the middle tile. And if everybody can always use that as a part of their pattern, it forces both players to try and accommodate it because the middle tile now serves a role of being the beginning of your pattern. And so I think on some level, it's also asking players to play more directly in opposition to each other in an interactive way, more than kind of a brutal mathematical way of how do I prevent. I don't think it solves the defense problem completely, but I do think it mitigates it enough for me to say it's palatable.
And it's also something that we've talked about. Mark, we demoed the game for friends. How many of them, while playing the game, took the approach, oh, I'm just going to stop those two patterns from being formed on the board?
Zero.
It's not something that new players think about. The question, of course, in the future will be, okay, once they've played it a dozen times, do they start to do that? Then is that detrimental, ideal? Is that a problem? We have been, you know, the alpha playtesters of the game, and having played the game over 100 times, we are kind of in that mindset of we're kind of stuck on that. And that isn't the player experience most people are experiencing the first time they play the game.
I still personally choose to not play the game that way, to my detriment. Like yesterday, I made the tee when my opponent was not the tee and was like, oh, well, just made their pattern for them. Probably game over. It wasn't. And I know that's like a me personal thing, but I just don't choose to play the game that way.
That's nice of you. That's why we lose to 7-year-olds in Connect Four.
I've never liked the meta strategy.
That's true. Even going back to Eternal, you did your own thing.
At any cost. The cost was losing a lot.
We also got some feedback about the complexity of the game. We had people play the game who I think would describe themselves not as board gamers.
Sarah was a real supportive friend playing the game a couple of times, and after playing was like, this is not the game for me. By the same token, had really good things to say about, well, I can see how there's a point of entry for casual gamers, and probably for the big brain people like I'm so bad and his play group, maybe this game like suits those like mega gamers too. We know from talking to the mega gamers that this game probably doesn't necessarily meet for them or hit for them. But it does kind of put the question of the game's complexity for me in a spot where if the spectrum is casual player who enjoys Settlers of Catan because they just get to sit down and play this game with their friends and they trade their wheat for a sheep and sometimes they build roads and, you know, oh man, I got that. How did I get cut off this time? It was by design. That kind of like casual player who enjoys Catan, which is great, or these like two other categories of players that really love studying abstract games like Go and chess are probably too far in the other direction for this game. But for me, that's like, I think that's kind of a nice spot to land. Do I know who, like, do I know how many people that hits? Not really. Is that something that's super interesting to me to find out about? No, I'll let you handle that as the business person. But it was a moment for me where I was like, there is enough to the game where the people that it's for will get something out of it, and the game will be there for those people.
And we're going to spend some time in season 3 talking about who our audience is. Maybe it's wholly and 100% a mistake to not be able to say right now who that is, because I would think most people probably design a board game with an audience in mind. I'm not sure we did. I think it we might have at one point, and then maybe it changed a little bit. I don't think, and I'm so bad as punching a wall right now, because this is something he's said to us many times. Who's your audience? Who is the game for? I don't have the 10-word answer to that yet.
I have a 10-word answer to it.
Okay.
When we started the project, you said two things. You said, I want to make a game that my children would like to play, and we want to make a game that we would want to play with each other. I'm good to play this one with you.
I like beating you in things.
Doesn't matter what the game is then.
Doesn't matter.
How about a game of Tracing the Sky instead?
Nice name. Yeah. Where'd that come from?
I don't remember.
It was me. What do you mean? I was setting you up to say something nice about me.
Oh, dang, I'm brutal.
We don't know what the name of the game is yet. It's still abstract game in our documents. You had thrown out an idea before, like The Night Sky, which I really like. There's another game that's like The Starry Night Sky. And I keep going back to when I'm envisioning the theme of the game and what I want the game to invoke from players. I keep looking up at the sky and tracing and finding the pattern. And so I keep saying Tracing the Sky.
I like it. I really like it.
We'll see what lands.
Is lands our new like buzzword? This really landed well with the audience today.
That's a good one. We'll figure out who that audience is later on.
The other thing that I found myself taking away from the ambient discussion about the game, because I don't think we were really getting formal feedback the way that we were trying to at Victory Point Cafe or Kublai Khan. But my takeaway from kind of the ambient discussion around the game was, one, there are people that enjoy the game. Two, they might just be our friends and family. And we already know our coworker is going to buy four copies.
Box it, ship it to him. Fully funded already.
We talked at Kublai Khan about how there was like pressure on people to say something nice about the game because they were about to come on mic. You could argue the same thing. There were people that came to play the game last night that were predisposed to saying the game was good. But like the difference between the Kublai Khan response and the event response last night, again, I think points me in a direction of, and maybe this is something that feeds into our audience question, or maybe it's something that points to how we need to respond to feedback differently in season three. There's such a range of, I'm going to buy four copies, I'm not going to play this game again. I don't want to steal your line of like, oh, we have such a small sample size of people responding to, will they play it again or would they buy it? But I think there's enough of a spread where if you were to extrapolate, like there is a number of people that would buy the game, which again is kind of like it boosts my confidence and belief in the game, even if it's just because the nice friends that came out to play had a good time with us last night.
Is it the Monopoly killer that NPR is looking for in their copy of Stealership and their whole copy of our entire podcast? No, it's not. But I'm really happy with the creative process that we've gone through. Remember when we were building Animal Kingdom? How we got to where we're at is, although you don't believe it, those things are connected. We have said it many times that we're not teaching you how to build a board game. We're showing you how we built ours. And our path was wild. A lot of turns. Shout out, Randy.
Turns or twists?
Twists, yeah.
I think they're supposed to be one turn.
Those are different things. There were a lot of twists. But I'm happy where we are.
I'm also happy and proud of where we have come to with Tracing the Sky. When I think about our framing of the way that we've decided to tell the story of our process, and I think about the range of feedback that we've gotten, especially the feedback that kind of led us into this kind of less optimistic space that we were in kind of for the last couple of months, seeing the other end of that with people in our community yesterday was a good reminder of the creative process as a whole. There are these moments, and we've gotten different feedback from different people. Peter is like, the editing is not the fun part. It's more fun to live in the realm of ideas. And I think you could look at that and say, oh, the capture version and the three color lines version and the upgrade versions that we tried in between the nice, clean, rotating board that we had been testing for the longest amount of time and to what we've arrived at was kind of this resistance to the nitty-gritty revision process because it's challenging, it's unpleasant, it's uncomfortable. But I've said this a couple of times, in our planning and in our other meetings that coming back to the more simple rotating board rule set that we have now with the North Star, it was such a refreshing return to me that I was like, oh, I missed this. This has a lot of the elements in games that I enjoy. Is it the next Monopoly? No. Is it the next chess? No. But it has these elements that I find very compelling. It was interesting to hear you talking about Starfold with one of the new players last night. He was like, oh yeah, the board is folding. And I'm like, there's nothing folding. But it was refreshing to return to that. And even to see like the first playthroughs of new players did have that little bit of like child wonder that when I think about the theme of the game or the image that I'm trying to conjure, it was there. I do also want to honor and respect the perspective of the folks in Discord who are like, just go work on something else for a little while.
Yeah.
And you could maybe make an argument that telescope version or the battle capture version or the lines version, these other like more radical departures from the core rotating board version that we've been playing were reaches in that direction of, oh, let's just work on something else for a little bit. We've crafted and like pitched a lot of games this season and last and in season one. There are a lot of like little ideas that would be fun to go back and revisit. And we want to do that, but not necessarily in sacrifice of the time, energy, dedication, legwork that we've put into what we're working on now.
Yeah, I think we have to strike that balance because, you know, as Peter had said, that's the fun part, right? When you're taking that idea and you're playing around with it and you're trying to make something work, I do want to continue to work on Colacoma is going to be happy, MMA Gauntlet. I think it will be fun for us to go back and revisit that game. I don't know if it'll be fun to revisit Supermarket Game. I do want to have other things going on next season. We're going to primarily talk about how we're moving this game to crowdfunding, but you and I are also going to be working on some other things. And those are some of the things that I'd like to show with video. You and I just playing a different game for 15 minutes and just showing some other things off in addition to playing our game. So with season three, we're going to continue the podcast. We are going to be moving towards crowdfunding, but like I said, do expect some video from us here and there as we dabble in the YouTube dark arts. I didn't buy a camera on the Misplay credit card to not make YouTube shorts with clickbait titles like listen until the end. I want to do some of those things that kind of make this process more fun, but also like visually more fun to our audience who's been listening to us talk for 2 years about board games. That's hard. I listen to other board game podcasts. It's hard. So I do hope adding a little bit of video content is going to be something that is interesting for our audience. And for me, when we're talking about creative process, that's a big part of it for me. I like doing new things like this. You know, I started a podcast with you 5 years ago just so I could learn how to make a podcast. I didn't care what we talked about.
Has it really been 5 years of podcasting?
2019. That's more than 5 years, math. But we took like a year off.
Since we're talking about our process, it wouldn't be an end of the year show without looking back on the year and the process.
Highlights. I think the first place we have to talk about when we're thinking about highlights from the year is we were in the first exposure playtest hall. And when I say we, I mean you, but we were there. That was our stated objective. We got there. We playtested our game at Gen Con. Just getting all of the ducks in a row to be able to do that, that's a huge win. That was the highlight of the year for me, even though I wasn't there.
Are we going to run it back this year?
We're running it back. Whether we are in the first exposure playtest hall, maybe we're there with something else. Because like I said, we're going to be working on other projects too. Maybe we bring MMA Gauntlet. No matter what, we're back at Gen Con. We're there. I want to go. I missed last year, this year. And it depends on how we structure our crowdfunding campaign. So we're there. What we're doing there, I'm not 100% sure yet.
In addition to that, kind of following the momentum of being in the first exposure playtest hall, we looked for and created a lot more opportunities to go out and put the game in front of other hobbyists, other professional designers, to rub elbows, network, build community, get feedback. And we found ourselves in a lot of great places. We found opportunities to test with the Golden Gate Game Makers. We were at East Bay Board Gaming Convention. You were at Protospiel Online and KublaCon. That's more than once a quarter. Like, we really did get out and put the game in front of other people.
The next highlight for me was going back to early in the year, and that was having Randy O'Connor here in studio with us. The fact that Randy, who is an accomplished game designer, was willing to drive across the bay, which I'm almost never willing to do, and come to our studio, that was a big moment for me. I was really excited, not only that he was willing to come, but to share with us his ideas and his experience building games. And it's somebody that we have continued to and can reach out to in the future when we have questions.
We also had our coaching sessions with Fernando in the same vein of like a person who gave a lot of mentorship when we probably really needed it. It was the time we spent with Fernando that really refined our test redesign process that we then took with us when our time with him was done, that has propelled us into Tracing the Sky.
And that was part of the Unpub mentorship program that will run again next year as well. If you're a new game designer, or I think it's still something we would benefit from, I would definitely consider signing up to get some mentorship. It was definitely something we needed. Another highlight for me this year was reaching out and speaking to playingcards.io. They were super kind and they gave us a premium account so that we could better host some of our games and unlock some additional features. It was also really nice of them to send us some playing card stickers, which we brought to our event this week and we're passing out. And Greg even said it to me when we were at the event. One of the things that we have going for us is there's a really good way to play our game right now on playingcards.io. If you haven't played our game, there's links in Discord. You can hop right in. You can click to see the rules. I think within just a few minutes, you're playing the game. And I think it's going to be a really good tool for us as we move forward and we move towards crowdfunding to be able to share that on our page and say, hey, try our game. Give it a playthrough before you decide whether or not you want to purchase a copy.
Huge thanks to them. I always find it surprising, and I don't do it often, but you don't get things unless you ask for them. And so it's cool when you ask for something and you get it. And then just the last thing I think is the widening of our personal network and community in the gaming space. There are some very devoted, passionate, supportive, realistic responders, members of our Discord community who, even when we're feeling not great about things, are like, oh yeah, like this happens all the time and this is a relatable thing. Maybe you should try this. Here's a game to play. Here's a resource to check out. We talked very early on when we started down this path of, we're like following in the footsteps of giants. Well, we also are being held up by the people that we've been able to cross paths with and build connection with.
I have truly appreciated all of the comments and the discussion in the Discord over the last, you know, few episodes of the podcast, that when we've been publishing the podcast, people have been coming and, you know, immediately giving their thoughts or their feedback or advice for us as we, you know, tried to dig ourselves out of that hole.
I think it's those words of encouragement. And I've joked with friends that you're the friend I come to when I need to hear the things that I don't want to hear. It's nice to have those people in Discord for us also in the endeavor of designing a game.
And when we're thinking about, do we want to continue with abstract game? Do we want to go to crowdfunding? Do we just want to make it print and play? It was those discussions in Discord. And even though all of it wasn't fluffy, cushy, oh, you guys are doing great, keep going, I don't think anyone ever said it that way. They gave real concrete advice and feedback. And it was those things that like helped me see we can do this. We can absolutely do this. We can take this game to crowdfunding and be successful. What is success?
Tune in next time for season 3. He's laughing.
I was like, that's a cliffhanger. I like it. Well, if you made it this far, you did listen until the end. And we appreciate you. And we'll see you next year.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, J.P. Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Ajos, Brian, Bins, Peter, and Howley Boy Games. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors.
Did I cut you off? I know you're going to keep going there.
No.
Highlights. I wanted to get that in.
That's good. You put that on the soundboard for season 3?
Oh, we've got some upgraded gear coming. I will make more use of the soundboard. Yeah.